Afternoons with Chad Hastings and Kevin Dunn.
Don't make me have to separate you two again. Damn it.
On the Horn, 104.9, AM 1260, and hornfm.com. With the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
Afternoon delight.
They always were afraid that I was schizophrenic.
All right, let's go hour number four on a Tuesday. We will keep you updated on Astros and Yankees. Oh, there's another run on the board, Astros fans. Altuve had already scored on a wild pitch, and then another bit of an unconventional way to score, but you take them all however you get them. Also in the seventh, Gurriel with a sacrifice fly brings home Brantley. It is 4-0. Yankees do get out of the inning, but now we're going middle seven, so seventh inning stretch time, and 4-0. Astros, Gerrit Cole, 102 pitches through six innings. We will see if it's him coming out for the seventh. Yankees have now gone to their fifth pitcher of the game. 4-0. Astros will keep you updated. Let's go to the Vaqueros Cafe and Cantina Hotline and talk some football with one of our favorite nerds to break it all down, and that is Alex Dunlap, OrangeBloods.com, RosterWatch.com. It was his job to go combing back through Texas and Oklahoma. Alex, how was that?
Can we have Kevin on the show?
Oh, yeah,
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, Chad, Kevin, what's going on, fellas? No, so just one quick question. 102 pitches, man. I guess once you get to the playoffs, any pitch count stuff, they just throw it out, right? You go out there and wear that arm out. Man.
And he's back. He just threw his 104th or 105th, and they're leaving him in.
Yeah, I think 118 is the most he's ever thrown, and that would have been in these playoffs. And a lot of it, Alex, you know the way it is. You just kind of you use those numbers, but playoff baseball is a little different. And also, there's some of the eyeball stuff. They can see, they can tell if he's tiring down, and obviously he isn't right now.
Well, it's good news for us, I suppose. Man,
yeah.
That's a good pitcher. You want him in there as long as you can.
No joke.
That's it.
The Yankees want him out.
So, Alex, I was reading through your defensive breakdown of the game, and just a really interesting perspective number that you threw out. You counted 28 missed tackles in this game against OU. You went back to figure out when was the last time you had calculated that many missed tackles, and you went back to the game that ultimately got Vance Bedford fired as defensive coordinator. Do I have that right?
Yeah, it was October 1st. I had to go back and I looked through all the games because, you know, I keep all the games in the same templates, you know, so I can judge versus previous performances and stuff like that. So I had to go back through every single one. I just had to keep going, man.
Yeah.
But I remember there was one kind of like that. I always remember there was one, you know, there was one that was just egregious. And I finally found which one it was. It was October 1st, 2016. It was the Oklahoma, I believe the Oklahoma State game.
Yep.
And I remember that one because I remember it was my birthday on October 3rd, the Monday, that Charlie Strong said that he had stripped Vance Bedford of his play calling duties finally. And so, of course, you know, Texas went on that year to lose to Kansas and then everything else. But so, you know, not much got done. But, it just goes to show. It's like if you remember how egregious that was, that like the straw that finally broke the back to where Charlie Strong had to go against his boy, Vance Bedford, and take away the play calling duties. That was how bad Texas tackled versus Oklahoma this last weekend.
Yeah.
How much of it to you, and obviously missed tackling, it goes on the player and it can go on the coaches in terms of teaching proper technique, but how much of it, too, is those guys being put in weird spots schematically? What did you think of Orlando's scheme against Lincoln Riley in that offense?
It was horrible. I mean, it was a terrible scheme. You guys can see, and anybody listening to this, you can just go back in your mind and just think about it. Okay, Texas knew coming into the game that they were going to have to do something to contain Jalen Hurts' ability to run the football on them. You know, not necessarily his ability on designed runs, but his ability to tuck the ball, find a little bit of open space, get into that open space, because when he gets into the open space as a runner, man, that guy's a problem. He's an issue. And so, you know, we talked about it all week on the message boards at Orange Bloods. We said, you know, who's going to spy? Clearly they're going to spy, you know, like, and you see it over and over and over again whenever Texas would get pressure and the pocket would collapse from the outsides. Hurts would just step up and the seams would part and he would just dash into wide open green space because they have guys like Deli Adeyemi, who ran a Nike certified 4.97 40 time whenever he was a recruit, I believe at the opening or one of those Nike advanced, possibly the one up in Dallas. You know, everybody knows Deli's not a speed burner. You have him matched up in man situations, you know, deep down the field against number two. That kid, I mean, that kid's an unbelievable CD Lamb. I mean, it just looks like from this year to last year to this year, it's like that guy has just put on some armor. That's a whole other deal. But CD Lamb's awesome. But you have situations where he's running wide open with a dude like Deli Adeyemi 6 yards behind him. Who knows what Juwan Mitchell's doing? He's trying to run up into the line of scrimmage and get his nose dirty in there, but he's just getting washed out. He's, you know, if he was acting as a spy, he was never effective in that role at all. And you know, it was crazy, guys, because this was one of the games I actually got to, because I have radio Saturday nights. I had to miss watching a lot of these games live, and my first time viewing them is watching them back. Well, this one I got to watch a little bit of it live, you know, and I was thinking to myself, geez, dude, whenever I have to count up the defensive burns and stuff in this and the coverage burns, this is going to be a nightmare. But it turns out it's like there really weren't that many burns because, honestly, I couldn't even tell what the defensive assignments and the coverages were. And I think that put me on par with basically everybody else in the defensive backfield. So I'm not sure they knew what they were doing. I mean, people were just running so wide open. Things were so busted all the time that it's like it's impossible. Like, it was a complete and total breakdown. And, I mean, at some point you just have to say, how can this occur? And is anybody peeing on our legs and telling us that it's raining whenever they say that this is all completely fixable? And that this is isn't indicative of anything worse underneath the hood, because it's like if it's fixable, it should probably be preventable, right? And we know that with Hurts, it's like we knew that Herman said, and even said it post game, he said that, you know, the number one issue coming into this year was making sure that Jalen Hurts wasn't able to pull the ball and kill us with his legs and extend drives, and you know, we need to be able to rein him in and we need to be able to contain him like that. And so, to me, it wasn't preventable. So, how fixable is it? I don't know. I mean, it was a discouraging loss. Too many missed tackles, too many blown assignments, it looked like Charlie Strong type football. It was just disappointing to see from this team that, in many ways, you know, I still feel like they've turned a corner in many ways, but certainly a bit of a digression and a slide backwards versus the Sooners.
And that's well said. Yeah, I think they've turned a corner, maybe not as sharply as they thought they did. So you got linebackers chasing guys in the flats that are bad matchups. Maybe you saw it. I didn't see the spies that I thought I was going to see on Jalen Hurts. And then also, this has been a problem for a little while now. Teams are getting to the edge on this defense, and it's not just Oklahoma. What is it about Todd Orlando's defense that allows that, and is that fixable?
It's just like, what are you doing having Joseph Osai playing in an overhang capacity where he's basically looks like a big glorified nickelback? He's so far away from the line of scrimmage. You know, I mean, if you want contained, you want somebody taking on the outside shoulder and being a force player that can contain guys, push dudes upfield, and make guys have to turn it upfield, funnel them back inside. You have a good long player who can do that. You have Brandon Jones off the edge, and Brandon Jones had a bunch of blown contains in this game as well. It's just he wasn't taking on the blockers there whenever he had whenever they had Sky on over to his side to where it was the safety I guess technically he was like in more of like a nickel whenever they had it on over to that side, but he was taking on people to their inside shoulder with his outside shoulder getting turned inside super easily. And you just think to yourself, like, that to me it has to show that, for one, I know that they're being taught these fundamentals, right? These guys are being – you don't forget these fundamentals that you're taught since you're in middle school. I think that maybe from game to game, whatever they came up with for this game, whatever that was that Todd Orlando rolled out there, it was too much for them to figure out. They, you know, you had all basically everybody playing hesitantly in the back end, which resulted in them being in the wrong places in the wrong time. And then, you know, in one case with B.J. Foster, you have a guy on the complete other side of the equation who's just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going YOLO, and I'm gonna knock the hell out of everybody. come in here like a missile, and at least, you know, I won't get in trouble because I'm going 115%. And that's just you see what happens. Guys' eyes aren't up. They're not, you know, their heads aren't on a swivel, and you find yourself in trouble. I think they got to simplify, man. To be honest, it's like I feel bad coming on the show because I'm just telling you how bad it was without really having any answers. You know, I don't know. I wasn't in the meeting rooms last week. I don't know exactly what he put on their plate. I just know that it was too much, and they couldn't handle it. And they need to figure out a way to, like, you know, you got these certain players as a college coach at the Division I level. Your job is to coach to their strengths and to put them in the best positions possible. And that's just not what happened on defense at all this week. It was a complete disaster.
And Herman did talk at the press conference yesterday about simplifying. Yeah. He mentioned that a couple times, it's got to get simpler.
But Alex, it's that weird mix. You want to simplify, but you don't want to be like Charlie McBride simple. I mean, there needs to be some complicated things in there, but that's balancing with guys that maybe aren't starters and maybe at different levels of all understanding that. And we're talking about trying to get 11 on the same page, right?
Well, yeah, man, and I think that whenever, you know, that's a good point that Herman talked about that yesterday. I kind of forgot that, but I think that with what Todd Orlando does, right, in essence, a lot of what he does is fairly simple, right? He changes up some coverages on the back end, but that isn't the way that Todd Orlando has always thrown people off. You think back to his games against really good players. I mean, I've seen Todd Orlando go toe-to-toe with, like, bad defenses against dudes like, I mean, was it Lamar Jackson that he was able to go beat? I forgot whether it was Kyler or whether it was Baker Mayfield. Maybe it was both.
I think it was Baker.
Both, wasn't it?
Or actually,
it was Baker.
Yeah.
And I think it was Kyler at Texas at least once, right? Once. And then, so, I mean, we've seen him bring these game plans where, you know, different exotic pressures come, or, you know, or where they bring pressures from different spots, or these zone fire blitzes, or where he comes in with these weird 7 and 8 DB sets that throw the quarterbacks off and stuff like that. And that's fun fly around football for these guys. That's not like, hey, we're going to run palms to this side. If number two comes across and he becomes the number three wide receiver on this side, we'll go palms on this side. We're going to have the linebacker who's in the overhang dropping the curl flat. We're going to bracket over the top because we can't let number two get the best of us if he's going to be motioning to that side. And then these guys, just their heads start swimming. And they say, what the hell does that mean, right? Like, and then, but on the other hand, it's like, hey, when we go to Cowboy package, we're going to bring DeMarvion. Like, DeMarvion, we're going to walk you up off the edge and have you knock in and go get that bastard. Mm-hmm. Like, That's a little, you know what I mean? And
yeah,
when we do, we're going to have Brandon Jones draw back and he's going to pick up number two. That's the kind of thing we're like, oh, okay, that's a, you know, that's kind of like you draw it up in the schoolyard. It's a fun play. I think that maybe when you simplify, you can do it with things like that. And it fits into what Todd Orlando has done and been successful at previously. You just wonder if they just kind of got, made it too hard on them this week. You know, they were playing like they didn't know what they were doing, because I can't figure out what they're doing.
Alex Dunlap, check out orangebloods.com at Alex Dunlap NFL on Twitter. So, Alex, I saw the article today on the defensive side. How far into the offensive side of the OU game are you?
I'm actually watching the second sack right now. So I'm on sack number 2 of 9.
Gotcha. You're on sack number 2 of 9.
You got a ways to go, Alex. You got a ways to go.
Oh my God.
Looks like I'm 12 snaps in, and I'm just now on sack number 2. And they talked about today, Shackelford. They brought him out in front of the media today, and they asked him if they were all on the offensive line. And of course, he said, you know, we'll take the blame for whatever. But, you know, clearly, there's a lot of ways that things can get messed up without them being on the offensive line. I'll tell you what, though, these first two sacks were definitely on the offensive line. The first was Shackelford. It was a solo base assignment for him that he got beat. And then the second one, it was just, I mean, it was Junior Angulau, man. The minute he saw this one technique cross Shaq's face away from him, he needed to open up his hip to that blister number nine. He's good, man. Kenneth Murray, number nine, I believe. So yeah, it was Shackelford and Angulau to start it out. I don't think that all nine sacks will be on the offensive line. If so, it's going to make my charting a lot rougher and make people a lot madder at me. Oklahoma Orange doesn't actually look so great.
Well, I know you're not there yet, but you said you watched it. There were twists and stunts. It's what Grinch likes to do. How much of that is on the offensive line coach to make sure that the offensive line as a unit is ready for that?
Well, it's on them, but I mean, like I always say about with these offensive line coaches, I mean, all they can do is give you the like one of my old coaches used to say, it's like every day whenever we teach you something like this, or we teach you about a technique, about how to use your hands, or about how to open the gate with your hip right here, or how to keep your eyes, or how to get your foot in the bucket and stuff like that. All those things are like a tool, and you should think of all of them like a tool. And it's like you have this belt of tools, right? To where it's like in any situation that comes up, you can think about what you've been taught, and you can, and it's not like we have to continue drilling these things over and over and over again, because there's an answer to everything, right? Like if I get up in front of a chalkboard right now and we talk this over, that I'm going to explain to you what the answer is for how you should attack this situation, right? Because there's only it's 11 men versus 11 men. Like there's no cheat code. Like there's always an answer in theory. And so what this is I'm giving you tools right now. So with these offensive linemen, I really do feel like they have their own tool belts, man. They know exactly what they need to do. None of this stuff is rocket science. They need to be communicating with one another better. And Coach Herb Hand, he's the one coach on this offensive staff that I give all the credit to for loading that belt up with tools, because I've seen them in action over and over and over again throughout the course of the season. It's one of the easiest offensive lines to grade and to evaluate because everything is so clean with them, with what they do. I think with this one, it's just obvious, man. The one I'm watching right now with Angulau, he completely just shuts the gate on this thing for a guy that has crossed the lineman's face down from him as slide protection, which you absolutely cannot do that. You're going to have somebody run up like behind you, like right behind your butt. And it's just that, like that simply can't be happening. So for the offensive line, maybe it's just because I've studied it so deeply and maybe it's because I'm, partial to what Herb Hand has done here at Texas so far and really do believe in it. I'm probably a little bit more critical of these offensive linemen as players when they make these mistakes, just because I know that they have those tools in their tool belt not to.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Alex Dunlap, orangebloods.com. He's about to get back to watching some film. Check it out at Alex Dunlap NFL. He will let you know when he's got something to report. Alex, we always love talking to you about it, man. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much, fellas. I'll talk to you all soon.
Thanks, Alex. Appreciate it.
Good football stuff there, man. Yeah, at times during that game, it felt like the offensive linemen had in their belt like some scotch tape and a paperclip. And that was about it.
Yeah, and I knew that Shackelford, I think we all did, against Gallimore, because Gallimore has looked good, and we knew that now that he's really, really taking this seriously. Mm-hmm. But that was going to be a tough individual matchup, but it didn't always come down to individual matchups. And a lot of times they are stunning so much that how many times is that going to be the case? I'll be curious to get his take on the offensive line after. And I'm a big Junior fan. He's a redshirt freshman. Getting back to not making excuses, but this is kind of where the program is, that you have to start a guy like that. We're just happy we didn't have to start him as a true freshman,
yep.
which we thought we may. We even got a redshirt year in. But really good offensive lines,
right.
The Wisconsins, the Notre Dames, you go through it.
You redshirted all of them.
Yeah.
In the perfect world.
And then they start their redshirt junior year when they're 22.
Yeah, that's true.
Unless you're a badass. Quentin Nelson started.
True.
His sophomore year. So.
Or 26 if you're a BYU.
Or 27, 26 right. If you're BYU. No. Oh, any of that.
A little different. All right.
Then you got back problems.
Yeah, that's true. Back problems, mortgages. We like them mature and old, but not that mature and old. Not like Chad and Kevin mature and old.
We got kids, car payments.
Right. All types of stuff.
Stuff to deal with.
Yeah, he's on his second wife. It's just been a real B.
AARP meetings. There's all kinds of stuff going on. All right, coming up in the Big Three, the Astros have decided that 112 pitches is enough for Gerrit Cole. They head to the bullpen with a 4-0 lead. It is bottom eight, and we will keep you updated. Coming right up, then Kevin's got one and done for you on the horn. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm talking about. A little sax solo in the rain never hurt anybody.
Yeah.
What you got, Sam?
This is Grover Washington Jr., Mr. Magic.
Great sax right there.
I love a good storm.
Isn't that beautiful?
It is. It really is.
Tell you what.
I love a good storm sitting here, driving around now.
Gentlemen and ladies, if you're looking for a little action on a rainy night, I would think this song would have to work every time.
Yeah.
Say the name of the song again.
This is Mr. Magic by Grover Washington Jr.
The song's called Mr. Magic.
Are you going calendar on us now? Are you changing things up just to change it up? Were you going alphabetical there?
Well, what did I do?
Gentlemen and ladies.
Well,
or are you going 2019? It can go either way.
No.
I'm not going to hold the door for you.
No, I just wanted to make
sure. You can do it yourself.
I just wanted to make sure I covered both sides because I was in my mind initially it was just going to be, hey, guys. But I thought, no. If you're a person out there and you are trying to get another person to, you know, do naughty things with and or to you, I would think this song could help.
I bet you we have more ladies that listen than gentlemen. I'm not even saying man, woman there. I'm just saying.
That's well played. Well played.
I'm not sure how many gentlemen we have if you go to the text line.
I can feel a lot of our female listeners nodding along to that. Yes. All right, let's get you an update on the Astros game. The score has changed. Big three.
The Big Three. The Big Three is brought to you by Dr. S. Brent Brotzman, an orthopedic surgeon providing personalized, empathetic, and cutting-edge care to all athletes from the recreational to the elite. BrotzmanSportsMedicine.com.
So Chad comes in and he said, man, there's something about that I just absolutely love. And I turned around, I go, I know, we're both Texas boys, and that was a Texas storm. Pretty cool. I like when you can see rain, and we can see all the city right here. And Chad's like, shut up. No, it's replay. I should have guessed.
I said, no, I love it when they get it right with replay in the baseball playoffs. The Astros are the beneficiary of it. They challenge a play at first. Great play by Bregman. Great play by Gurriel. They ultimately call the batter out. And it helps them because the next batter is Gleyber Torres, and he goes yard and dumped one into that short right Porsche. 371 if you need it, by the way. 371 on that one. 4-1.
So it was an upper deck shot?
Astros. Yeah, exactly. 4-1 Astros. So it could have been 4-2.
That's huge.
With a bad call. So thankfully they made the right call there. 4-1 the Astros into the bullpen now. Gerrit Cole went 112 pitches. Smith just came in and gave up that homer, and now they're going to, it's Will Harris, right?
Will Harris, yeah. Here come the cutter and the, he's got a good curveball too. We talked about Presley's curveball when it was rocking in the first half. Harris has a nice one too. You're going to like this too.
Yes.
So I was thinking about the whole Astros game two with the swing and miss.
Mm-hmm. That miss.
Could have been huge.
The supposed foul ball, yeah.
Could have been gigantic.
Right.
On those, and you can even do it fifth inning on, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Why not be able to look at that?
No clue. It's black and white.
Yeah. It's quick.
Why not be able to look at a black and white? Right.
And here's the other thing. They should have something in their ear, kind of like the NFL officials that are obviously getting told stuff, like we saw on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. That never happens.
Yeah.
Never.
Right.
Ever.
Uh-huh. And yeah. I think that was the Texans game, wasn't it? With one of the many pass interferences towards the very end.
Yeah.
And they didn't even have to go talk to anyone. Why not have that and just say, yeah, we're going to take a look at it. It's a strikeout, inning over. That took 3 seconds. We got the right call.
Yeah, that's what I don't understand. This one didn't take them long. And again, that's what the thing, and we talked a little bit about it this week. That was also my point on the whole USC Notre Dame thing. My question is just,
I was messing with you.
Is it a flag?
Yeah.
If it's a flag, why can't you just look? Because that's a simple one, right?
Mm-hmm. Pretty easy.
Right? We're not asking, did he pull on the jersey at the 5-yard mark? No. Was the coach on the field? That's all you're asking there.
Right.
Where are the linebackers? That's bad defense.
it's bad defense, and everyone we've talked to, we're hunting Ian Boyd. So maybe get Ian tomorrow.
You know where he is. He's in a bunker somewhere breaking this all down.
He totally is. And so hopefully he's broken it all down. We'll get his take. Maybe try and get Paul Scipio later on this week. Try and get as many as we can. We got Jeff Howell tomorrow. We got Dustin. You and I know football, but we definitely bring some people on that really know it at a stupid level. And everyone I've talked to, usually I kind of like it a week after. Like Paul and I would do it, or you do it with different people who are like, how do you think he played? Oh, I thought he played pretty well. Oh, I didn't think he played as well. It's fun to have differing opinions.
Sure.
Everyone's on the same page here. That's how obvious it was.
Yeah, just hands up in the air.
It's a bad scheme.
Palms up. What do you do?
Got Joseph Asai chasing a 4-4 guy in the flats. And Asai probably wasn't as big a problem as Delly doing it.
So you haven't talked to one person that said Buddy Ryan would have been proud?
No, I didn't talk to anyone. I haven't talked to anyone.
That's fair.
What would the 46 look like with 13 people out there?
Oh, that would have been good. If the 85 Bears...
I saw five Otis Wilsons.
If the 85 Bears could have played 13, they would not have lost on Monday night to the Dolphins. Let me just put that out there right now.
Right.
That would not have happened. All right, let's get you your second one and done of the show today. Here's Kevin Dunn.
I was curious what he was going to look like. It can be a little different, even when you're feeling it like Garrett Cole, when you go take on your childhood team. Can you imagine Chad starting quarterback for your Abilene Christians? What's their,
Are they? Are they the Wildcats or something?
ACU, I'm not sure. All right, whatever. Can you imagine Chad going to College Station, Kyle Field, when it was still the Wrecking Crew? And there'd be just, and Chad, you could have been ripping it up. You had five touchdowns the week before, six the week before that. We're throwing it. We look like Andre Ware in Houston. No one has any idea what we're doing spreading the ball. It'd still be a little different. And so you add that to just how big this game was for Garrett Cole. I saw he had five walks. Chad, this guy, it doesn't matter. Even if he can kind of scatter five walks, he was still pretty much untouchable. And you asked what makes him so good earlier. It's really pitching with that stuff. A lot of guys that have that velocity and have that stuff, they don't make that adjustment until they have to, until the 97 or 98 is 93, and they really like the lifestyle and the paycheck. And they don't know what they're going to go do after this. So they're going to try and pitch for two or three more years. The fact that he's gotten all that figured out and that he looks kind of, I mean, it's like watching a Greg Maddux type guy with 98, 99, and he can finish the way he does with some gas late. He has been, to me, this year, and I know you don't do Cy Young with postseason, and I even said this regular season, he's been the most dominant pitcher in baseball, and he's been one of the most dominant pitchers I've ever seen in the postseason. This was a huge Game 3, a let's kind of get a feel for where this thing is going Game 3 and setting the tone for the rest of the two games in New York, and I know you're not out of it yet. You still got to get three outs. Garrett Cole delivered again.
It's like dating a 10 and then finding out they're curing cancer.
Yeah, right. I know. Exactly.
She looks like that. And what is she doing? She's a model, right? No. She's not a model. She's working on the last stages of, you know, eradicating cancer from the planet.
Yeah.
Well, that's all she's doing. Okay, fine.
Yeah, dude, that chick, it must be really rough conversation. But I'm sure, you know, I'm sure the leg is worth it, as we would say back in the day. I don't think we'd even say that, but you get what I'm saying.
Uh-huh.
And then you find out she's, you know, oh, no, apparently they have conversations about geopolitics, and he's just trying to keep up and nodding.
You can think through it like Greg Maddux, but you can act it out like a Dwight Gooden
or Randy Johnson,
or however you want to say it. My God.
It's a good way to put it. It's a good way to put it.
That is terrifying.
Joe Montana, if he had a stronger arm.
Yes, right. 112 pitches for Garrett Cole, Astros. It's real simple with me on the math of these things, sometimes what I think of. Remember, if the Astros win this game, the series has to end in Houston. It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Right? You get home field back, and you force the series back to Houston for at least a game if you win this one.
Yep.
That is as simple as it is for them right now. Obviously, you want to win more than that, but up 4-1, Astros trying to add to it. Two outs, but runners on first and second, and the Yankees have already used six pitchers, and they're warming up a seventh.
Yeah, and look, they've got Sessa in there. I don't really know this guy, so it's almost, I don't want to say they've given up, but without the lead, they're not going to burn some of their big guys. What?
I just thought of a terrible joke.
What?
An awful
Did I mispronounce
joke.
His name? I don't even know that.
No. I think you're right on Sessa. I believe that's the pitcher
I think
that
it's Sessa.
I believe that's the pitcher that Roy Halladay was flying with. Nah, I'm just
Oh, well, hey.
I'm sorry, that's bad.
Whoa.
I heard Sessa and I thought Cessna.
What's going on with you?
It's a terrible joke. I should have said it during the break. I shouldn't have said it out loud. I'm totally going to hell now. I am terribly terribly sorry.
Yeah, we kind of knew that, though.
I didn't buy a plane called the Dr. Killer. He did.
No, all right. Exactly.
All right.
You weren't popping a bunch of pills
and
doing loop-de-dookies. I think that is the technical term.
What was that? Loop-de-dookies?
Loop-de-doopties.
Oh, loop-de-doopties.
Loop-de-doopties. A little loop-de-doop-de-whoop-de-poop-de. Glub, glub.
All right.
Yeah, see, you started all that. This is all on Chad,
I'm
by the way.
I'm so sorry.
R.I.P.
Now we're both going to hell.
Astros are, Astros are 60-21 at home. 60-21 at home and 47-34 away. Kind of big to get that locked
Kinda up. Kind of big, yep. All right, one last thing coming up right now. It's a Craig Way Sports Report on the horn.
One last thing.
Well, we can't guarantee you much in sports, but we can guarantee you that the ALCS will end in Houston. The Astros win it 4-1 today in Game 3, so they're up 2-1. That means it does have to go back to Houston. Get your Game 6 tickets now.
Yeah.
Get your Game 6 tickets just in case. But obviously, they'd like to close it out in New York. But a great performance from Cole again. The only bad part, Kevin, he only had 7 strikeouts. What's wrong with Garrett
Cole? Yeah, what's happening here? Didn't get the 10, did have the 5 walks. It goes to show you this is how good of a pitcher he is. He can not have his elite control and still be fine. It helps having 99.
Crisis for Garrett Cole.
Right.
He only struck out 7.
And a giant hammer. And this is nice, man. If you get tomorrow off, then at that point, you know, kind of relax a little bit. Go get a good meal in New York. You're up 2-1 and maybe go with Greinke, depending on that.
And Osuna, by the way, finished it off for the Astros. All right, we'll be back for a Wednesday show tomorrow. Grab Jeff Howe, maybe a couple other guests for you as well as we continue to roll through the week. Have a great Tuesday. Longhorn Blitz podcast coming up. More Texas OU breakdown coming on the horn.
Nah, you're chucking Joaquin.